Hi everyone, I'm Megan, and welcome to Word Crash, the game show where questionable plots compete for your vote to win a place in the Word Crash Hall of Infamy. Let's meet our contestants. She's an author who strives to give her readers a magnificent and immersive experience. From Canada, the author of Us and Them, T.L. Coughlin.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for coming. Congratulations on getting married.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate it. I'm really excited to be here.
Next, vowing to never grow up completely, she spends her days writing for a younger audience. The author of A Girl Named Ruthless, from Jacksonville, Florida, Melody Pendlebury.
Hi. Very excited to be here.
Well, nothing left to do but get to it. Let's play Word Crash. Strap in and get ready for the jump to light speed. It's time for In Space. In this game, we ask our contestants to add In Space to the end of any book or movie and tell us what the plot is. TL, what do you have for us today?
All right. Well, I took a little bit of a twist and I ended up going with a cult favorite that's now ramping the world. It's called Squid Game In Space. Meet Phoebus, a down-on-his-luck human trench worker of 3B4, the tattered remains of a planet that used to be our very own Earth. One day, bloody and broken, he receives a holocard sent from the highest order of the galactic, made up of rich aristocrats and world builders, for a prize like no other, to create a new planet and reign supreme. Before he can even say yes, he's portaled to a planet that doesn't exist on any map. Tasked with various traditional games from the competitors' respective planets, they must fight until one is left standing. Only problem, it's all about equal fighting. No weapons, no machinery.
I like this. Is he fighting just humans?
No. There's a whole bunch of alien species from all these different planets that were plucked out of desperation.
Okay. Well, let's come up with one of the aliens.
Let's call him Floofnort.
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 Yeah.
Okay, I like Floofnort. Is Floofnort the name of the race or the guy? The species.
The guy.
I'm sorry. The species of
the guy.
Okay.
That's his name. He chose it himself.
Floofnort. Hey, Melody, what makes Floofnorts different than humans?
I want to relate it to the real Squid Game, something with their faces and the mask. So maybe they have a triangle or a square or a circle on their face, but instead of a mask, it's their actual face.
What color is this alien species?
I think the color needs to be pink. I'm imagining them like the actual, I forget what they're called, the gamekeepers. But I'm imagining him like their costume with the pink robe and the black mask, but that would be like their skin, like a pink skin, but their face is black and then the marking is like a pink square.
TL, do they have any special powers?
Sure. This guy, he's able to lift things with ease. Okay. Gravity or no gravity, it doesn't matter. He can control it all.
And who's our hero again?
Phoebus.
Now he's down on his luck. What was he doing before? Like, what was his job that ground him down? And
so he's a human trench worker, so they're basically tasked with cleaning up Earth as much as possible so that they could potentially rebuild it, but Earth has been completely decimated, so he's pretty much just working to the bone. Truly,
I'm seeing this first scene where he's doing some job disgusting and dangerous and dirty, and he's just slaving away on it. What can we give him to do?
We can have him digging. I think actually digging and trying to find that piece of earth that's hidden behind lots of waste and decimated remains of everything that made Earth, Earth.
He reminds me of Wall-E.
Yeah.
What makes Phoebus special? Why is he chosen for this?
For this case, it's just the true desperation. It's the fact that it's not just down on his luck. It's that he knows he's meant for more, and yet he's confined to the horrible world around him. There's no escape from the planet. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing to do but dig.
Okay. And he chooses this? He's not abducted. He actually chooses this?
Abducted.
He's abducted.
I like abducted.
We have Phoebus. We have Bloofnorf. Floobnorf?
Whatever permutation, I think.
Bloofdorf. Do these two get along? Is there, you know, do they fight in the beginning? How do these two characters relate to each other?
I think at first it's going to be a shocking relationship, something that Phoebus has never seen before. So it's not just visually shocking, but it's also unsettling because here he is, just a human man with his muscles and hands and skin. Meanwhile, Floofnorf, he can manipulate anything with just quick look. So mm-hmm. it's a bit intimidating, but you know, I can see a kind of relationship developing, maybe some dependency, maybe some hidden fun relationship that ends up twisting into some kind of devastation later on.
Melody, Phoebus is a fish out of water here. He has no idea what's going to happen, probably no idea what any of these alien species is. What kind of mistake does he make as a stupid human?
What I would think probably the biggest mistake would be social norms. So maybe he tries to shake somebody's hand, but they don't have hands. So it's very offensive.
No hands? Do they have tentacles? Do they have legs at all? Are they a floating blob?
Well, maybe Floorblop? Feenop?
Well, I think what we need to do is he's Bloofnorf. Floofnorf?
Bloofnorf.
Bloof yeah, North. And that's his first and last. We'll make that his first and his last name. Bloofnorf, Floofnorf.
Yes. I don't know if he has arms, but he could also not have arms because he can just think about moving things and it moves. So maybe some of them don't have arms. Maybe Bloofnorf doesn't have arms.
So we've got our two contestants that are going to be the center of the show. Who's the big antagonist?
I'm thinking the system. The system's the antagonist, or somebody you don't know who they are until the end, but you think it's just like a group of people controlling everyone.
Yeah, okay. So like the highest order, they've kind of presented themselves as this savior, but also the enemy at the same time.
How do all these people feel? Are they into it? Are they scared?
I think with what the prize is, which is to create a brand new planet and become this reigning supreme being, is so much of an incentive that the desperation kind of builds into greed and mm-hmm. excitement and ferocity and wanting to do anything that you can in order to get this fate that seemed to be impossible, that's now possible.
The system needs to establish itself as the villain. What's that kick the cat moment where everyone's like, oh no, these are really the bad guys?
I think just like Squid Game, it's going to be the ease of elimination, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know the rules necessarily, and there's this entire order that's constructing these rules. They can change at any point in time. So I feel like a big event or a big moment would be where they assume what the rules are based off of their own cultural understandings of their own world. And then all of a sudden, the highest order just goes boom, something else entirely.
I know this is totally out of your wheelhouse, Melody, but how does the first one die?
I think I'll just have to go with red light, green light, but they're in space with zero gravity. So they have to stay still and they have to float still.
And how do they do that?
How do they win?
We want this kick the cat moment. We want this moment that's kind of like it's got to set up the entire mood. I think in Squid Game, they just shoot someone. That's not good enough for me. We need something better. We need something in space. We've got to take it to the next level.
I think they should shoot a meteor.
Hit them with a meteor. So they're all floating in space, right? I see them all trying to stay still in space, which is pretty difficult. And when one fails, they just hit them with a meteor.
Done.
It's incredible. Okay. How do we think the relationship between Bloofnorf and Phoebus is going to evolve? Are they going to end up at each other's throats? Are they going to become friends? Are we looking at like a buddy cop kind of thing?
Let's play off of Squid Game again. So there's that one scene where the man is holding his friend still just by his own strength and making sure that he doesn't move and die. And this isn't a friend just yet. It's a stranger. So maybe we have Bloofnorf use his mind control to make sure that Phoebus doesn't get hurt. So somebody bumps into Phoebus, all of a sudden it's red light. Phoebus is struggling, you know, humans, they don't know space. He's never been in space. And Bloofnorf uses his powers and makes him stop, saves his life. And I think from there, maybe that's that instant connection, that reliance. Mm-hmm. And then later on, they'll realize only one person has to win.
There has to be a scene where the main guy betrays Bloofnorf.
How dark are we going to get here? Is he going to betray Bloofnorf and Bloofnorf dies? Or is it one of those things that he betrays Bloofnorf, but Bloofnorf gets out of it anyway?
I think he has to die.
He has to die.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think all of them have to die, except the main guy.
How does this change the character of Phoebus? There's this guy who saved his life. Yes, he's different. He's pink. He doesn't have any arms. But he saved his life. And now he's just going to throw Bloofnorf into the fire. How does that change Phoebus's personality?
I kind of see the first scene reopening again in his mind's eye, you know, digging so hard that he's willing to sacrifice his very own nails to get what he wants. Not necessarily greed, but that desire to be more and to get that almost takes over. And it doesn't mean that he needs anybody else to accomplish this, because in the end, there's only one reigning supreme being, and this is a prize beyond all recognition. So why wouldn't he put everything to the wayside in order to get what he wants? So I think it'll be an internal realization of his true self. You know, he didn't expect to be that person, but in the end, he was.
This is super dark.
I thought about doing Squid Games for Squeaky Clean, but it was too hard.
I understand completely. Popularity contest in a middle school or something like that. Everyone's competing to be the best friend of the most popular kid. Anyway, I'm sorry. I shouldn't be workshopping that. So now we've got Phoebus. He's basically like, no, I can do this. I don't need anyone. You know, he's totally closed off. He's probably losing a lot of emotions here and becoming inhuman because he's cutting himself off from feeling. It's kind of like Phoebus is falling to the dark side because he's prioritizing power over empathy and emotion. Where does that get him in the end?
Well, again, I think I'm a very visual person. So for me, it's almost Phoebus is taken from Earth, taken from that humanity, taken from the human species, the human population. And as he's portaled to this new, you know, system in the galaxy, he's even further away from his humanity. So in a way, he almost becomes an entirely different species. And then from there, if he wins, maybe, yes, maybe no, that species will be mimicking this new vision of him. He's realizing that that's the strength. But is it? Question mark, question mark, question mark.
He wins. He beats everyone. He betrays Bloofnorf. He's lost some of his humanity. In the end, do they give him what they promised? Or do they betray him?
I think that maybe the new planet is Earth. And they destroy everything off of there. So everybody that he worked with, everyone that he was working towards for the last 20 years of his life, it's all wiped away. And he's given this basal, primal planet that has nothing to grow. And he's the only one that's left on there. That's it. And he gets to choose to do what he will with it.
I envision this final choice at the end. Like, he's won. And they don't surprise him with this. They tell him, here is your planet. But to get what you want, you can kill everybody on that planet. This is grim, dark, dark. This is grim, grim, dark, dark, dark. Do we have a name for this?
Maybe just Fallen.
Fallen. I like it because he's falling. He's ascending and falling at the same time. I don't even think Netflix should pick this up. It's too dark. It's time for Secret Sauce, where our authors share a technique or strategy they use to keep the creative juices flowing. Melody, why don't you start us off?
I like to do writing sprints. So I'll set a timer for 15 minutes and I'll write whatever I can in that 15 minutes. And even if it's garbage, I can always edit it later. But it's usually on a work in progress that I have going. It's never just something that comes to mind. I have done those practices before, but I've been doing it a lot with just my work in progresses and the books that I'm writing. Usually it's actually pretty good. I find that if you're overthinking things, I'm not a plotter, I'm a pantser. So if I'm overthinking things and trying to plot things out too much, it's usually a mess. But if I just let my creativity flow, it's better than it would have been.
For people who may not be familiar with this terminology, could you explain what a plotter and what a pantser is?
So a plotter is somebody who writes down a plot for their story before they start writing the story. So they'll write either like an outline, or they'll write different scenes, or they'll write different acts. There's a lot of different ways that people organize it, but basically what it means is you plan something before you write it. But a pantser means that they just fly by the seat of their pants and they sit down and they just start writing a story from beginning to end without any real planning besides in their brain.
Well, given that, I would say that I lean more towards a pantser. Especially with my first book, I just said, you know what? I got some ideas of where I want to go. Didn't write anything down, just started writing that first chapter.
Stephen King is a pantser, so that always makes me feel better because he wrote like a million books. So if he can write all those books of that length, like I think of The Dome and how ginormous that book is, if he could write that as a pantser, then we must be doing something right.
I feel validated. So you write for 15 minutes, you force yourself to write for 15 minutes, and you said it doesn't matter if it's good. What do you mean by that?
I guess it doesn't matter if it's grammatically good. So if I'm having typos, my words are not the correct tense, or it's not the best vocab word I could have used for that sentence, I'm not sitting there and Googling it during that time. I'm just writing what comes to mind, and then I can edit later. But yeah, so it's just me kind of playing the movie out in my head and writing it down.
You know, something that keeps coming up episode after episode of Word Crash when I talk to authors is the idea that you don't judge your own work until it's done. That judging your work and saying, this is terrible, or this is awesome, or what am I doing, that doesn't help you write anymore. You know, this whole idea of, I'm going to write 15 minutes, whatever comes out, comes out. Another author came in and said, I'll write 1,000 words on a stupid idea just because I need to get it out of my head. And they don't judge themselves for that. They just write it. Maybe it came out good, maybe it didn't, but they don't judge themselves for it. Fantastic. Thank you so much. TL, what's your secret sauce?
My secret one is actually playing off of your last idea, Melody, right there. I, again, major visual person. So when I'm writing, I can basically see the movie kind of playing in my head, the scene, the characters walking through. And then I hit that roadblock, scene pauses, everything goes gray, and I start to freak out. The way that I keep those juices flowing and to try to, you know, get reinvigorated, I go on walks. I basically go on walks. I look at different environments. I envision different scenes, whether it actually has to do with my actual book that I'm working on or whether it's a completely different idea. It's just to get that same mindset going where I can see the character again and I can see their actions, their thought processes, and go from there. And so usually when I do that, I give my brain a bit of a break, but I'm still, you know, working in some way. I end up going back and I use that same energy and then I apply it back to what I'm working on.
So many people have said, in order to keep writing, I need to stop writing. Those people who are sitting there looking at a blank Word document, trying to figure out what to do, that's not going to help you. And it sounds like this is the same thing. Go take a walk, go do something, stretch your legs. There's a reason why people think of things while they're in the shower, right? Oh, I have a solution. It's because you're not thinking about whatever it is you're doing. That's very contradictory. Do something by not thinking about the thing. But it works. Grab your brush, mop, and the awesome power of friendship. We're playing Squeaky Clean. In this game, we ask our contestants to reboot a dark and gritty story to remove the grit. Melanie, what do you have for us today?
For Squeaky Clean, I thought of The Wolf of Wall Street. Instead of a man, it is a wolf, an animal, that dresses up as a man and pretends to be a stockbroker, but he is continuously eating his coworkers. And it sounds kind of dark, but my inspiration was also Little Red Riding Hood.
If we're going to keep this squeaky clean, we can't have there be any deaths on camera. So what do we throw up instead of death? All of us adults are going to assume that it's death, but what do we give the kiddies?
I think that I picture the scenes as the wolf like calls in a coworker to his office, and then it's like a coworker with some distinct feature, like maybe she wears glasses. And so then he emerges from his office and like dabs his chomps with a handkerchief, and then he like flicks the glasses behind him or something like that.
So why did he choose to be a stockbroker?
He chose to be a stockbroker because he was living as a wolf in the woods and he wasn't very happy with his living situation and he wanted to live in a big giant mansion and have lots of money. So he decided to become a stockbroker on Wall Street because he knew that's how he could make the most money easily. But he's having a hard time fighting his animalistic nature. So he wants to be a broker and do his job, but he's fighting with eating people and being a carnivore.
Okay. Now, everyone else in this world, are they also animals or are they humans? Is he the only intelligent animal walking around?
is the only intelligent animal that is walking around. An FBI agent that investigates him and is kind of the antagonist of this is a lumberjack. His name is Agent Lumberjack. So he's not a lumberjack. He's an FBI agent, but his name has lumberjack in it.
Okay, great. There's a lot of really crazy scenes in The Wolf of Wall Street. What kind of partying does our wolf do?
It would be kind of a scene of him not caring at all about the partying. And maybe it would be him envisioning everybody as like turkeys and like their outfits instead of actual people. So it would be him just having montages. So I think he would be trying to stay away from the parties, but he would obviously keep ending up there. And that's when people would start disappearing.
So he's got this problem. And is the point that he rises above this in the end?
I don't think so. I'm thinking, like, even though he is the main character, which is hard for him to be bad if he's a main character, I think of Little Red Riding Hood, where the ending should be that all these people aren't actually dead, but the lumberjack releases them from his stomach. So I don't know if the wolf can kill people and have a happy ending. I don't know if that can happen.
That definitely makes it more squeaky clean and much less dark.
So I like to teeter on the edge of this is a bit too dark to, okay, this works.
Keep in mind, too, we're both dark stroke authors. We specialize in dark fiction.
Is the wolf good at being a stockbroker?
Very good.
He's getting what he wants. What kind of things does a wolf want when he's got his money? What does he want?
Well, the first thing he buys is a big fancy house because that's what he always wanted.
Was it made of straw, sticks, or bricks?
I think just pure concrete. Like, he's in the concrete jungle, living in a high-rise, multi-million-dollar New York high-rise. But I think he finds that once he buys this nice, fancy condo, he still is craving the things from when he lived in the woods. So he starts stocking his house with, like, trees and rocks. And so he's not very good at interior design when it comes to the modern world.
There's one fundamental question that everyone's going to ask about this story, and that's, how does a wolf make it in society, in a business suit? TL, what's he doing to blend in with humans?
I don't think he blends in. I think he rises to stardom. He's like a viral TikToker, you know, global phenomenon. It's suddenly this wolf is on 2 feet and is fully autonomous and knows what to do and can fully like speak to the nines and manipulate and convince people to get, you know, the money and to be successful. And I think the world's going to love him.
Well, if the world loves him, is he going to be one of those financial YouTubers where he's kind of like, I made $1 million this way and you can too. Just buy my book.
I think they definitely hire him to do that.
Melanie, this lumberjack FBI agent, how good is he? Is he on the trail of our protagonist?
Yes. As the rumors of disappearing eventually catch the attention of Officer Lumberjack at the FBI, he starts to follow. His name is Jordan Wolfort instead of Jordan Belfort. He starts following Jordan Wolfort and investigating him more. As he's investigating, Jordan Wolfart starts catching on that he's being watched and he needs to do something to get the lumberjack off his trails. He decides to take a break from his disguise as a human and disguise as an old woman.
TL, what kind of evidence does our FBI agent find?
Nod table legs.
There are nod table legs at the murder scenes?
I think so. He's sharpening his teeth.
Melanie, what thing does the wolf do that just, it's his total downfall? Like, this is his one mistake and they can catch him now.
I think going off of PL's TikTok idea, I think he eats the wrong person who ends up being a very famous person, maybe somebody that's on social media a lot and documents everything, and the whole world ends up seeing him eat someone.
Ooh. TL, name a celebrity that you'd like this wolf to eat.
Oh, Chris Rock. Let's do Chris Rock. He's starting out on social media. He accidentally presses live stream and he doesn't know that he did it. And you can just hear him screaming from the belly of the wolf.
And he has to be wearing a red hoodie before he gets eaten.
He eats Chris Rock on camera, escapes to the woods. How does Agent Lumberjack find him out there?
Agent Lumberjack sees the live stream of Chris Rock and uses the video to figure out where the wolf is hiding. So he finds a little cottage, breaks into his house, but the wolf is pretending to be a little sick in bed. The lumberjack doesn't believe it for a second, and he chops the wolf up and reveals all the people that he's eaten.
Before we go, it's time to give our authors a chance to talk about what's new and exciting in their lives. TL, what's going on with you?
So again, my name is TL Coughlin. I have my debut novel of Us and Them, which is going to be published by Darkstroke Books, November 6, 2021. The premise of Us and Them came from the question, why are dragons found in almost every culture worldwide? Sure, many will say dinosaurs, but that's a little bit boring. So I kind of went with, what about aliens? I created a world where there's a secret underbelly of history controlled by the savior aliens known as Leviathan. You follow Evren's journey as the last of the 12 prophesied paladins of this secret society who conceal these dragon aliens and their masterful influences in our world history. When she joins the paladins, their unification will signal the Leviathan's return to Earth to save humans from their worst enemy, which is themselves. But when one of the paladins is found murdered, Evren must find the truth and the killer in a society founded on deceit. Of Us and Them features global dragon mythology. You've got a cast of multicultural and multiracial teenagers, hashtag own voices, just like me. A high-stakes whodunit, and it's set in the Canadian Rocky Mountains. So head to Amazon for the ebook pre-orders of Us and Them, and paperbacks for the novel will also be available on release day, which is November 6, 2021. You can follow me on any social media at TL_Coughlin.
Congratulations on this book. It sounds incredible. And now that everyone knows how dark you write, I think people who are fans of that will definitely check your book out because it's got to be dark.
Just a little hint of it, you know, here and there.
So, Melody, what's new and exciting in your life?
Yes. So again, my name is Melody Pendlebury. My debut novel, A Girl Called Ruthless, released in August this year with Darkstroke as well as TL. And it is about an 11-year-old girl named Ruthless who will do whatever it takes to live up to her name and decides to run for mayor of her town of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, with her kid best friend Owen as two kids in a trench coat. This story has a lot of whimsical tales and twists and turns, and even has some darker topics that it touches on, but in a kid-friendly way. If you want to purchase A Girl Called Ruthless, you can go to Amazon. You also can get signed copies on my website, melodypendlebury.com. And you can also find out all the other links for me on melodypendlebury.com. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram at melodypendywrites.
I'm sorry. We have to go back to this for a second. Two kids in a trench coat run for mayor?
Yes. It seems pretty unbelievable, but they do a good job at pulling it off.
So both of you are being published by Darkstroke Publishing?
Yes.
Can you tell me what Darkstroke is like? Because I don't think I've had two people being published by the same publishing house before.
Me and TL actually knew each other before we got picked up by Darkstroke. We actually were in a Twitter group called the Spaghetti Throwers before I got picked up in June, and then TL got picked up a few months later. But Darkstroke is a small independent publishing company. They specialize in dark fiction. They also publish like sci-fi. I know they publish cozy romances or cozy mysteries. So they just specialize in novels that are a little bit unique.
Thank you so much. Do they have a website?
Yes, they do. It's darkstroke.com.
Darkstroke.com. So, which pitch deserves a place in the Word Crash Hall of Infamy? Is it Squid Game in Space or the literal Wolf of Wall Street? You tell us. Tweet us at Word Crash Game and vote for your favorite story of the night. If you're listening on YouTube, remember to like and subscribe and get in those comments. Tell us how you would tackle our questions today. Everything we talked about is in the links below. Thank you for listening. I'm Megan, and this has been Word Crash, reminding you to always get creative.